Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Colonel Andrew Bacevich, who is a retired U.S. Army colonel and currently a professor of international relations and history at Boston University. His books include American Empire, The Realities and Consequences of U.S. Diplomacy, The New American Militarism, How Americans Are Seduced by War, The Limits of Power, The End of American Exceptionalism, Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War, and his latest book, Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. He has an article at BillMoyers.com, Questions for President Obama Before He Pulls the Trigger on Syria. Welcome to Background Briefing, Andrew Bacevich.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And the latest reports from the White House indicate that we're talking about a shot across the bow. What does that mean in military terms?
Well, I'm just going by what I read in the papers, and it appears that it's going to be a relatively brief sequence of strikes by cruise missiles launched from U.S. naval vessels off the coast of Syria. So the principal weapon system, apparently, is going to be a Tomahawk cruise missile mounting, of course, a conventional warhead. Speculation seems to be that this could go on for a couple days, maybe 3 days.
And I imagine it won't start till after Saturday when the UN inspectors have completed their work in inspecting the residue of an apparent chemical weapons use in the suburbs of Damascus.
Well, I mean, it depends on what the target set is. I'm speculating here, but I imagine that the chemical weapons inspectors are at the site of this awful event that occurred. Doesn't necessarily mean that that's a target. Target could be launch sites. Target could be storage facilities, could be communications facilities. I'm sure that the Pentagon doesn't want to kill weapons inspectors, but I don't know that their presence at the scene of the crime, as it were, necessarily precludes the United States from acting. We'll just have to see.
But Colonel Andrew Bacevich, this does appear to be a political use of military force as opposed to a military use, if you will, of military force. Would you agree?
I think that's precisely correct. My view would be that the politics that are driving this are domestic politics, that the president got himself into a bit of a fix when he announced that chemical weapons use by the Syrian government constituted a red line, and he is embarrassed by the fact that the red line has been crossed, and he's not done anything. And this has attracted a huge amount of criticism. He's now being accused. I think the whole thing is bogus, but he's being accused of forfeiting American credibility, and therefore the pressure is on for him to act in order to restore that credibility. And I think that's basically what this is all about, helping the president get himself out of the corner in which he put himself in by an ill-considered remark.
And preceding you on this program, Colonel Bacevich, was James Fellows, the national correspondent for The Atlantic. He makes the case that the president should go to Congress and make his case for war. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this claim, certainly not original with President Obama, that the president, in his role as commander-in-chief, has the authority to order attacks like this, is completely wrongheaded and is at a minimum consistent with the spirit of the Constitution, and I think is in violation of the letter of the Constitution. I mean, certainly if the United States is under direct assault by some forces, the president wouldn't need to go to the Congress to get permission to attack or to use military forces to defend the country. But we're not talking about that kind of a situation. Syria poses no threat to the United States, and therefore, to go by the literal reading of the Constitution, he ought to go to the Congress and get congressional authorization to go to war, because that's in fact what we seem to be intent on doing.
So, as a military man or a former military man, Colonel Bacevich, how does the military execute the president's orders here when you have this sort of ambiguity about the use of force where, on the one hand, too little won't send the kind of signal that they want or will look like, you know, a slap on the wrist, and too much might trigger a wider war?
Well, it's a balancing act. If we go by the views expressed by General Martin Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the senior most officer on active duty, it's pretty clear that actually the military doesn't want to have anything to do with a possible war in Syria. I mean, Dempsey sent a letter to a member of Congress about 10 days ago that was quite clear on that. Nonetheless, Dempsey and the rest of the military, they know that the commander-in-chief, in fact, is that. They follow the president's orders. It's entirely appropriate that they should do so, even if the president is acting stupidly or inappropriately. We want civilian control to be sacrosanct. I would imagine that the officer corps, the senior members of the officer corps, find some consolation in the fact that the attack is going to be a limited one. I mean, were the president proposing to send in U.S. ground troops? Were he proposing an air campaign intended to overthrow President Assad? Then I suspect the military doubts would be much greater. But at least if we go by what we're reading in the press, what the president is asking the military to do is to fling a few dozen tomahawks from offshore and have done with it. So the risk to U.S. forces, the risk of being dragged into something much bigger and much longer doesn't seem to be that great.
Again, I'm speaking with Colonel Andrew Basevich, who is a retired U.S. Army colonel and currently a professor of international relations and history at Boston University. His books include American Empire, The Realities and Consequences of U.S. Diplomacy, The New American Militarism, How Americans Are Seduced by War, The Limits of Power, The End of American Exceptionalism, Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War, and his latest book is Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. He has an article at BillMoyers.com, Questions for President Obama Before He Pulls the Trigger on Syria. Now, of course, Israel has done these strikes. They haven't been punitive strikes. They've been targeted strikes against what the Israelis say were transfers of sophisticated ground-to-air missiles from the Syrian inventory to the Hezbollah. But the Israelis are calling up their reservists. So, you know, that may well be a caution because it's a dangerous neighborhood and it's about to get more dangerous. But on the other hand, you can't help noticing the silence from Vladimir Putin. Some people suggest that his silence is based upon the fact that he knows that the Assad regime did actually use these weapons, and either through a breakdown of command and control or because the crazy brother Maher had a fit, whatever the reasons are. But one of the things that strikes me, Colonel Basevich, that I wish there was more discussion about, and that is how much the U.S. and Russia have in common in Syria. Neither side wants al-Qaeda to take over, and we know that the al-Qaeda-affiliated al-Nusra Front is the most effective rebel force, and if they win, then we'll have, you know, Somalia on the Mediterranean. And the Russians argue the same. And they say, where, you know, the Caucasus are only 500 miles away from where this jihadi the new jihadi university is underway.
Well, you're right, I think, that were the driver of U.S. policy in this instance security, national security policy, if that's really what was driving the train, then it might be possible for the U.S. and Russia to collaborate to some degree. But as I suggested earlier, it's not security considerations that drive in the train. It's in my judgment at least, it's U.S. domestic politics. So we, in effect, however indecisively, we are going to act in ways that will advance the cause of the radical Islamists who are intent on overthrowing Assad, despite the fact that, as you say, if and when they succeed, it's quite likely that we're going to be not only unhappy with the outcome, but we'll probably end up seeing Syria as more of a problem than it has been under the Assad regime, or frankly, more of a problem than it is even when Syria is torn asunder by this civil war. But none of that matters, given the primacy of domestic politics in this in the crisis.
But in your article, Colonel Basevich, at BillMoyes.com, Questions for President Obama Before He Pulls the Trigger on Syria, you ask these questions, which, you know, one would hope somebody's asking the president. And I think, to be fair to Obama, he's not George W. Bush. I think he's much more thoughtful, and he's certainly not Dick Cheney. And I recall that when the U.S. did go into Iraq, shortly thereafter, the Iranians sent through emissaries basically said, we want to talk. They thought they might be next. And that moment of leverage was thrown away because Cheney basically said, we don't talk to evil. Now, you do have, you know, not similar, but, you know, a situation not entirely dissimilar, where you have a moment of maximum leverage before you go bombing, and nobody knows how bad the bombing is going to be. So presumably Assad's concerned. So I would wonder why we're not exploiting this moment of leverage to get some kind of deal to have a peace talk.
I mean, you're making a powerful argument, and I'm repeating myself, and it's my view that decisions are being driven by considerations that actually are not connected to long-term policy, that president's in a fix, and the chemical weapons usage, and I agree it probably was done by somebody in the Assad regime, in a sense provided him with the opportunity to fix the problem, to demonstrate that when he draws a red line, he really means it, therefore to get his domestic critics to back off as he makes a show of restoring American credibility. My view would be that if the United States lacks credibility, it's not because the president drew a red line and then didn't enforce it. If the United States lacks credibility, it's because of all of the ill-conceived and bungled policies of the past couple of decades that have resulted in the misuse of American military power. That's the problem. The problem is not what the Assad regime has done in the last 10 days or so.
Well, there is, though, the fact that only 9% of the American people support a war against Syria. It feels as if many in the press and many in our political class are in completely disconnected from that fundamental reality, the wisdom of the American people.
I think you're exactly right. But, you know, from the perspective of that class that you just referred to, the American people are not wise. Within Washington, the perception is that the American people are feckless, that they have isolationist tendencies, that they're too willing to call it quits and go home. And from that perspective, the polls indicating popular opposition to any kind of conflict with Syria don't much matter. Now, they might matter if we had some sort of a significant election in the next 2 weeks or the next 2 months. But we're out of the election cycle right now, and therefore it becomes easier for people in Washington to disregard what popular opinion has to say.
So in your article at BillMoyes.com, Andrew Basevich, Questions for President Obama Before He Pulls the Trigger on Syria, you point out that war is a risky business. So from a soldier's perspective, surely you know and how much the best-laid plans don't work, how much Murphy's Law comes into play. If we look at a similar example with the Bosnian War, where the U.S. bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, infuriating the Chinese, that's collateral damage. I mean, there may be some ambiguity. Maybe, you know, there were reports that the Milosevic and his wife were hiding out there. But the long and the short of it is, it's, the assumption has always been that that was an accident. So isn't that inherent in war?
It is. And I imagine that the General Dempsey and other senior military officers are quite conscious. They ought to be conscious of the risks involved because they've experienced them at first hand in the Iraq War and the Afghanistan and so on. That said, a limited cruise missile attack reduces the likelihood of unintended consequences, of unpredictable circumstances, to the point where they may find it somewhat acceptable. Were the president ordering a large-scale attack by manned aircraft, therefore posing the risk of American planes being shot down and pilots captured, it becomes a different story. Were the president proposing to send in special operations forces to locate chemical weapons stores and to destroy them, that would carry a far greater risk and more uncertainty. So I think one of the things that the president's doing here in the design of this operation, which again I think he's pursuing for domestic political reasons, but he's sort of ensuring that the design is such that the possibility of an untoward outcome and greater complications is considerably reduced. And I'm not saying that because I'm sticking up for it. I think this is a dunderheaded idea, but they're undertaking the operation in a very conservative way in order to try to minimize the likelihood of bad surprises.
Well, but even if it is surgical, which is, I think, next to impossible, it's very likely that the Assad regime will use it as a propaganda platform and even stage stuff to make it look like how terrible the Americans are. I mean, that's just the nature of this regime.
Well, I think more than that, it's the nature of U.S. relations in the Islamic world that there's going to be considerable outrage. Now, here go the Americans again.
Right.
Intervening in that part of the world, killing Arabs, killing Muslims, almost necessarily, and yes, to some degree, Assad will try to use that as a propaganda victory. And regardless of what Assad does, just the actions taken at face value are going to breed further anti-Americanism in a part of the world where anti-Americanism is already rampant.
Well, Colonel Basevich, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Colonel Andrew Basevich, who's a retired U.S. Army colonel and currently a professor of international relations and history at Boston University. His books include American Empire, The Realities and Consequences of U.S. Diplomacy, The New American Militarism, How Americans Are Seduced by War, The Limits of Power, The End of American Exceptionalism, Washington Rules, America's Path to Permanent War, and his latest book, Breach of Trust, How Americans Failed Their Soldiers and Their Country. He has an article at BillMoyers.com, Questions for President Obama Before He Pulls the Trigger on Syria. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcast at IanMasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.